Hello and welcome to No Directions 2017 Gen Con Seminar Coverage. Special thanks to our Gen Con volunteers, Eric Bring the Knives and Andrew Mullins. For more seminars and other great Pathfinder content, visit NoDirectionPodcast.com.
Alright folks, here we are with one of our, not quite the last panel of the day, I think there's probably one more after this. But we are doing Setting and Scene, which is largely about our soft cover books, so campaign setting books and player companions. We are happy to talk about any aspects of our those product lines that you like. We can tell you anything about any of the ones that have come up recently. We can make cryptic comments about ones that are yet to come. So we're happy to sit up here and prattle on for a while, but we're also very happy to take any questions you like. So
I want to do some quick introductions, and then maybe we thought we'd run through the titles of the two main soft cover lines, and then give you a little bit of descriptions, and maybe that will prompt some questions for you, or you can ask us whatever you want at that point.
I'm Mark Moreland. I am Paizo's franchise manager, and in the past, I have developed many campaign settings and player companions, so I know the lines very well.
And I'm Amanda Hammond-Kuntz. I'm our development coordinator at Paizo, and I'm the primary person outlining, assigning, and developing pretty much both lines at this point.
My name is John Compton. I'm the organized play lead developer, so I work on Pathfinder Society, Starfinder Society, and the Adventure Card Guild. Also do a lot of reading through all of these books because I'm always looking for what is going to be approved for those organized play programs. Also did one of the development passes for Monster Hunter Handbook and was the person pushing for Disciples Doctrine, which is our January release.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
January release.
Yep. And John is the person who comes up to us when we're like, hey, John, is this maybe a weird thing that's going to cause a problem? And he goes, yes, of course, don't do it. That'd be a terrible idea.
Sometimes I ask what it is first.
Yeah. Sometimes he just goes, what the heck? Yeah. Good times. Yeah. Good times in the office. We only occasionally have fist fights. Right, John?
It's not a fight.
Since Linda sits there, she breaks them up most of the time.
That's true. We'll jump into the player companion line, unless anybody wants to do something else first. Our current title is Elemental Masters Handbook, which we have here at the show, and is our August release. After that, Elemental Masters Handbook is an interesting one. You can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so Season 8 of Pathfinder Society started a year ago, and our big push for that was to explore the Elemental Planes, which were some inner planes that we had really not looked at terribly much as a company. We had done some things in the City of Brass on the Plane of Fire, and otherwise we had provided about two paragraphs of information. Elemental Master's Handbook is a player companion book that provides new character options tied to elemental power. And we led off the season about a year ago with a book called Planes of Power in the campaign setting line, which gave a much more detailed gazetteer look at all four of those elemental planes.
Right. So that is out here at the show. And that will be followed by our September release, which is Anti-Heroes Handbook. And, yeah, that's one that looks at, it's sort of a companion to, like, Dirty Tactics Toolbox and some of the other player companions that we've done that's about being an unconventional hero. It's not necessarily being evil, but it is anything that would be outside of the normal realm of being, you know, your paladin, your champion, your righteous, upright person who does the right thing because that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I think we described it as a, what was it, a villain does the wrong thing for the right reasons, and an anti-hero does the right thing for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
So you're still a hero, but your motivation is not necessarily you wanting to be a hero.
Yeah. You're out for yourself. You've got ulterior motives.
Right, yeah.
You might actually have conflicting agendas, but your goals line up with the party at the time. And so there's all kinds of interesting background traits for those type of characters, all kinds of different interesting archetypes. Obviously, Rogue and Slayer are some key classes that we're exploring in that book.
That was also a fun book. That's also a fun book because we have several different classes that are based around codes of conduct. And it was really neat thinking about something that you had been working on, Mark, about what happens when somebody fails that code of conduct. Right now, you just become an ex-paladin, an ex-monk,
ex-barbarian. You effectively become a warrior without...
any spell class. Any spell caster, yeah. Anything like that, right.
And this was a neat opportunity to look at, well, hang on, what if there were another path beyond just ex-paladin? What if there were a whoops, but paladin? Right. So there are some really neat options in there.
Yeah, we introduced a new type of archetype that you can only take as an ex-member of a class.
Yeah.
So that you regain some of what you lost, but it comes at a price, or it is reflavored in some way so that you're not a completely useless member of the party, and ultimately you probably want to get an atonement, but if you don't, you're not running around with 10 dead levels.
Yeah.
You know, you can get some abilities to fill those empty slots, but they're not going to be either as versatile or as effective as what you would as a pure, you know, member, unfallen member of your class.
But they do offer some really cool story opportunities, yeah. especially for the ones that I've read over, where it's like, okay, you don't have cleric spellcasting, but something's listening to your prayers.
Yeah, your god has stopped giving you the powers you're used to.
But in
your efforts to continue praying, something else has been like, oh, there's a vessel that is used to channeling divine power.
Look, I know I'm not an angel, but if you just pretend that the tentacles are wings.
Yeah.
And so that really just allows us to cover some narrative ground that we hadn't really been able to convey very well mechanically, which is, you know, a very iconic trope of fantasy, which is like, you know, your fallen paladin, your adventurer who, well, I was a holy man, I was righteous, but now, you know, I've moved on and that's still a part of me. And so that allows you to sort of apply those types of abilities.
And another thing that we did with it that was, that I was really happy with, was the idea that if you embrace this fallen archetype that you get, then you have to atone twice. You have to atone for falling and then for being like, you know what? I fell and I'm cool with it.
And I was cool with it. Yeah, totally. I'm not quite an anti-paladin, but you know.
Yeah, I'm not an anti-paladin, but I certainly embrace being a pseudo-paladin.
Yeah, pseudo-paladin. We should have named it that, pseudo-paladin. Just kidding. That's a terrible name.
It's too late. It's already gone to print. We'll do an errata. So I had a lot of fun working on those. We also have corrupted teamwork feats where you're basically like, it's a teamwork feat that you get more of a benefit than the person who took it, the other person who took this feat with you, which ultimately you're going to find only among people who get them for free. Like, you're going to find
Inquisitors and
maybe Cavaliers, but other than, especially Elaine, I could see him doing
it. Selfish teamwork. Faulty teamwork.
Yeah, because he's a dick.
He really is. But we've got all kinds of little rules jukes in there. Another thing that comes to mind is the moral corruption that uses the corruption rules from Horror Adventures.
Yep.
That is really cool, and it is a different take on a corruption, which is fairly one-dimensional in Horror Adventures. There's an evil force that's corrupting you, and you know, as different events happen, different things happen to you, and you might get abilities.
Physically,
but there are drawbacks, and you start to look different, and you start to have you know, different and scary things happening to you. And this is a lot more shades of gray, and so I think that this is really interesting.
This one actually reminded me a lot of like the Dorian Gray thing, where it's like,
as you continue
you're becoming morally corrupt, and rather than have like
the picture
that represents that, there are just rules that give you other stuff as you become more and more corrupt.
So there's a lot of really interesting options. There's also, if you remember back from Ultimate Campaign, we had the random background generators. We've got that for anti-heroes, so a lot of good options to get the juices flowing for creating your character's background, or you can roll on the table and literally create a random anti-hero with a background that would make sense for why they are the way they are. So after Anti-Heroes Handbook, we have got Player Companion Blood of the Coven, which will be our October book. And I think John likes this one. You want to give this one a
So we've done several different Blood of the XYZ books. We have Blood of the Beast, which has a bunch of our scaled and furred races. We have
Mark's favorite book ever, by the way.
No,
you should have him sign your copy.
Delete that from the record. That can't make it to the podcast.
Moving right along. and similar books for Legacy of Dragons, where we examine people who have draconic backgrounds. Blood of the Coven was our way of looking at changelings and saying, okay, let's do more stuff with them. And on top of that, this is also an examination of the witch class, as well as several other classes that have hex, witch, charm-like abilities.
Shaman has some stuff in here. Yeah.
Very much. So this has been an opportunity for us to look at changelings and say, well, the base changeling has little bits that changed based on which hag was your mother. What if we examined ways of expanding that considerably? Hags have this ability to create covens where three of them get together and suddenly they lob 7th-level spells for free. Probably not a good thing to have in players' hands, but what if we let you make your own equivalent of a coven? There are 4 different hag deities out there. All of them are really angry. But what if you wanted to really... I know. We have this...
What an awful stereotype for us to propagate.
Yeah, well, but if you decide that you do want to have your character have one of them as a patron, here's how you can do it. If you want your cleric to manifest some of those coven-like qualities as you bring all of your companions into the dark fold, you can do that with Blood of the Coven. So it has a lot of fun little abilities like that.
Yeah.
After Blood of the Coven, we have People of the Waste, which is another really fun one in which we're getting to explore a lot of things in the Mana Waste, which is an area that we haven't really touched very much. It's not only the Mana Waste, it's also Blighted Wasteland, so like the Blighted Fangwood Forest and the Ferrani Forest. There's also Waterlogged Wastelands, so the Sodden Lands. I think Sargeva, that coast of Sargeva is in there. Anything that's around.
Did the Whirlwind?
The Whirlwind is in there.
Sarkoris made it in.
Demonic Wastelands is another one.
Yeah.
So we've got all kinds of things dealing with wastelands. And of course, because it's the Mana Waste, we are going to give you a lot more gun options in this game. So there are new firearms. There are.
I thought that's what Starfinder was for. Didn't we just release that?
So you had a lot more. Pathfinder.
Right, but you can use the Starfinder guns in Pathfinder, right?
You could.
In Pathfinder Society,
it would be a terrible idea.
I would feel entirely remiss if we didn't allow some of the firearm options in this book into organized play because I wrote them. So.
No. The Starfinder.
Oh, the Starfinder one. Yeah. Well, I'm sure.
12d12 is fine for my weapon.
Bring it down to d8s, and we're talking.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, so this has been a really fun examination of the Mana Waste among many other places, and one of the pieces that I've been assigned was do a couple of different style feat chains. Mm-hmm. Styles having first appeared in Ultimate Combat, where it's like, okay, let's do Tiger Style, where I'm tearing people apart with my bare hands. Boar Style, I make them bleed with my fingers. So it's stuff like that, but in this case it's, I have a firearm, how can I do fun things with this? And one of them is... basically allows you, it works off of the pistol whip capacity. So if somebody's next to you, you can pistol whip them more effectively. And as you go down the chain, you eventually gain the ability to knock them a long distance away from you. And while they're still flying through the air and falling prone, shoot them before they land. So you have all sorts of fun opportunities, a whole bunch of panache and grit and just oddities. And also one's also a grit feat where if you club somebody with a broken firearm, you have a chance of knocking the broken components back into place and unjamming it.
Good times.
Whee! Like happens in the real world.
Exactly.
We also have Dark Tower, so yeah, you can do anything.
Yeah, right? Let's see. So after People of the Waste, we have got Potions and Poisons. And that's a really fun one because that is all about exactly what it sounds like. A whole bunch of new poisons, a whole bunch of new potions. We get to play with some...
But which is which? Drink it and find out.
Yeah, drink the unlabeled bottle with liquid mark. That's a great idea.
Hey, I turned out okay.
No comment. but yeah, so we've got a lot of new potions, got a lot of new poisons. We've got some elixirs, which is a new sort of it's not new, but right, it's a
we really
type
haven't
of magic
done
item.
New elixirs since the
we
core rulebook, so
exactly, yeah. So
we've introduced a lot of spells,
there are some
but not a lot of ways to
we've got a whole new spread,
imbibe
a whole new spread, yeah, of elixirs. We've got something called tinctures, which is new for this book, and they are intoxicating consumables that are not exactly alcohol, but have an interesting little alchemical benefit when you drink them, and maybe something to make you a little cautious about doing it around a whole bunch of people, for example, or whatever the drawback is for that particular item.
Same sort of reason you wouldn't drink your mutagen in public.
Yeah, exactly. You probably
it makes
don't.
You gassy.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it makes you gassy, but
or grow claws or whatever.
Well, you know, grow
claws. Gain a size category.
Okay. Yeah. But that's also interesting because we're going to be doing some tables in that book to make it a little easier for organized play players in particular to find, you know, what potions or what spells can be created into potions and what can't be, because that's a mechanical problem that people run into sometimes, illegal potions.
So many potions of mirror image.
Yeah, yeah. So
or shield.
Just a nice little reminder of, you know, what's legal and what's not. And we also have a whole bunch of new spells that are specifically geared toward creating potions out of them and being, you know, the correct level and everything for that. So, after Potions and Poisons, we have Disciples' Doctrine, our January player companion. And that is one that that John is a very large champion for. So I will let John give the description.
We have a lot of gods in our campaign setting. We have also, and we do go into a lot of detail about a lot of these ones and their faiths. What really intrigued me are a bunch of our little minor faiths, the ones where it's just a demigod who has a couple hundred followers cosmos-wide, or the philosophical organizations that might not have any divine connection at all, like the Prophets of Calistrade. What is their story anyway? And this is an opportunity for us to explore a bunch of those and see, okay, well, what if we do give them options? What if we do go into more detail about what their story is? This also includes a bunch of our Tian and Tiansha faiths. So mm-hmm. Sangpochi, Tamashigo, and I'm missing at least one. Either way, we have a whole bunch of these guys. And so each one of them is going to get a pretty beefy description in there, oftentimes expanding upon what we've ever written before. And then they also get a good page of new character options. So that could be a Tamashigo samurai who works entirely based off of appeasing local kami in order to power all of your samurai abilities. This could be... I'm pretty sure that the Razmiri have something pretty wahoo in there.
Yeah, they do.
That involves, like, basically brainwashing people and...
And just yelling at them, right? Like, just...
Yeah, there's more to Razmir than yelling, Mark.
No.
And answering trivia questions.
Just because Jason walks up and down saying, yeah. Believe in the living God, doesn't mean that's all that they
yeah,
all do.
So Jason Bowman is our Razmir... champion in the office, and he got recorded by Sirenscape doing a voice of some "I am a Razmiri cleric" or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And he
all once, hail once the he, living god.
Yeah, once he was able to download this, he just walked through the whole office just playing it on repeat. And we were like,
there goes Jason again. He's got the mask.
We know he's losing an argument in a meeting when he starts pulling up his soundboard and playing that until we stop talking. but either way, I'm really excited about that one because it will provide a whole bunch of these faiths and philosophies that have been taken off into the corners and really bring them back into the light and give you some cool ways to play with them.
Yeah, we really wanted to be able to focus on providing options, like John said, for philosophies that aren't necessarily divine entities, but that you know have people who follow them, and they're not necessarily maybe cults, but you know they're groups and organizations that all have like-minded ways of doing things. Like the Esoteric Order of the Palatine Eyes is one that's in there that is not, you know, clearly they're not worshiping a deity, but you know they're a secret society and they have a lot of rules options that could be associated with them.
And a lot of the trappings of a rule. And I mean, they do follow the supposed writings of Tabris, who was a god, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. so they sort of, I guess he was Imperial Lord level, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a very rebellious demigod.
Yeah, a powerful angel, whatever you want to call him. it's about, you know, religions that aren't religions.
Yeah. Exactly.
And tied into you mentioning the word cult, Amanda, one of the early names for it was the Cultist Handbook.
Yeah.
And then we realized how misleading that could be, because this is not about being a cultist of, like, a demon lord. There, you won't really find, with the exception of maybe Razmir, you won't really find evil-aligned yeah. or intrinsically evil yeah. things in here.
There's certainly shades
of gray.
Well,
those evil kami you got to watch out for.
Oh, sure. Lawful neutral. Going to really ruin the world now.
We felt like Cultus had too much baggage attached to it, so then we went back to the drawing board and came up with Disciples' Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's alliterative.
And it sure is alliterative. Deedee. Yeah. Anything else you want to say about that?
I'm good.
All right. So after Disciples Doctrine, we have got Merchant's Manifest.
More alliteration.
Woo! Merchant's Manifest. Yeah, you see a pattern for our 2018 books. But that's one that we're still sort of sorting out all the details on that book, but the core concept is another one that that John was very involved in. So if you want to give a overview of that.
Yeah, this is... We've been coming out with a couple of softcover equipment guides, like the Adventurer's Armory 2 of late. And Merchant's Manifest has some similarities to that. But rather than being simply about, okay, here's a bunch of equipment, it breaks these things into theme by geography. The idea that we're going to take a whole bunch of mercantile landing cities and trade hubs and... talk about what gets traded into and out of there, but then also provide a whole bunch of things that you might purchase there that are unique or iconic of that location. So this is already a really cool opportunity for us to look at some cities that we have not examined terribly much. Khalsgard up in the Land of the Lenorm Kings, which is where the Path to Agenhae goes over the Arctic Circle and over into Tian Sha, or the other end of things in Hongal, where the whole trail ends. A curse in Druma, which Druma is basically a merchant nation, which has oftentimes been sort of the rarely examined, unfortunate stepchild of our setting, because everything there is pretty good. Like,
where's the conflict?
Yeah, I was like, oh, well, there was something terrible there. We sent the Black Jackets to go kill it. Oh, good talk.
Everything's great and peaceful. No adventure.
And as we examine Druma more and more, we've been finding more and more ways to make things very viable for adventurers. It's not all nice.
There's some good.
There's still problems when you're rich.
Ideas.
And when you are living next to them, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Mo money, mo problems. Pathfinder style. Does anybody have any questions about the player companion releases that we talked about before we get into campaign settings? Or
Page count 6 round 32.
Yes, yep. Always 32. Yep, right there.
Is potions and poisons going to have more halfling alcohol?
It doesn't have any racial alcohol, but it definitely has intoxicating substances and goes that route and kind of plays.
Any alcohol a halfling drinks is halfling alcohol.
Yeah, right. So all alcohol is halfling alcohol.
Yeah.
Alcohol where it had special effects of halfling drink it, but
yeah, we don't have any racial stuff in there. No, it's more general. We wanted it to be sort of a magic item approach, right? Or a consumable approach. You buy it, it does a thing, you know what it does, you can tell what it does, you know, if you're able to identify it. So a little more useful for sort of everybody involved. Good question though. Anybody else? Or did you have one back there?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, so...
Ask us a question.
Why?
I don't know why.
Good question, though.
Good answer, Mark.
Yeah.
Why else would they come to a panel if they don't want to be berated by developers demanding their questions?
Yeah.
And I will say, I will point out something that I was reminded of in reviewing the description of the panel, is that this is also an opportunity that if you have things that you would love to see in campaign setting books or player companion books... We're here. We have ways of recording ideas.
To fill with these product
we have
lines,
paper.
So.
We have pens.
Yeah.
We can do
I don't
the
have
thing.
Those things.
I can probably dig out the thing.
I'm all good. So
maybe we'll cover campaign setting, and then if there are no questions, we can get some suggestions, ideas, or
things that you have just burning questions about, and
yeah, totally. All right, so our campaign setting line. We've got one coming up that. Is a little interesting in the description. I think Mark wanted to give a little bit.
Is that
of
the
overview.
First? Is that the first one that we haven't?
It's on the schedule, but it's not. I mean, it's going to shift. So
yeah. Okay. So of our products, the next one that says it's coming out is was solicited as Construct Builder's Handbook, and when we ordered that one, what we got in, we sort of changed our mind on what we wanted the book to be. And so it has gone under a lot of change pre-release. So that's going to change on the schedule when it comes out. And to be honest, none of the three of us are really involved in what it has become. James Jacobs has sort of taken this product under his mechanical wing and is...
He re-outlined it.
Yeah.
It's getting reimagined from the ground up, essentially.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really the first time we've ever done this with a book, I think.
In recent memory, anyway.
Yeah. In the 7 years I've been at Paizo, we've never solicited something in the
book. Maybe modules could be considered sort of in that
category.
Yeah,
either way.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so, I mean, this was originally conceived to be like, here are a bunch of tools that you can use, that your characters can use to build constructs. Well, that really doesn't fit in the campaign setting line. So James has gone back to the, drawing board, and he's really excited about it, and unfortunately he is not at the show this year and therefore can't talk it up. But so that's one that we've solicited and that will be coming out, but will be
a 2018 book.
Yeah, it'll be in 2018. Yeah. It'll be undergoing some changes from what we initially said it was going to be.
Right.
But after we said that was coming out, in January we have Taldor, the First Empire, which is a 64-page gazetteer of the nation of Taldor that I wrote. And that is largely compiling a lot of the name drops of Taldan history that we had put throughout 10 years of canon and bringing them into one spot and really setting the stage for the War for the Crown AP, which is the one that launches in February.
Are people here familiar with War for the Crown, or know that it's coming up?
For those that aren't, or those that are listening at home and can't tell us that they don't know what it is, that is a political intrigue campaign that'll be set in Taldor, and as the name suggests, will be determining who the next ruler of the nation is. There are a number of different... ambitious nobles who would like for their brow to hold the crown, and the PCs will play a vital role in helping one of those candidates achieve her goals.
And on top of that, it's especially exciting because Taldor has really been one of our central nations in the campaign setting. They historically sort of forged the big empire of the Innersea region. And at this point, it has contracted to the point where they're a small nation state who still have grand dreams of what they once were and are led by an absolute jackal. So it's going to be especially gratifying.
Jackal.
So it's going to be especially gratifying.
If you can imagine that, what that's like. And so one of the things that I really wanted to do with this book was we had sort of presented multiple flavors of what Taldor was. Some of the stuff had sort of almost presented it as like a foppish caricature. Some of it had presented it as like a really ruthless, like political backstabbing place. And at the same time, we had described it as like being both super opulent and ostentatious, while at the same time being really run down and poorly maintained. And so one of the goals that we had with this book was to really more clearly define Taldor and get rid of some of the more comedic elements. I feel like a lot of people had treated Taldor as
the butt of a joke,
you know, that like, oh, these people think that they're still this great empire, you know, and oh, they care more about their fashion than they do about stuff. And so Crystal Fraser, who developed the book and I who wrote it, put a lot of work into trying, you know, humanizing the people of Taldor so that they're not just caricatures and they're not just, you know, the butts of jokes, and, you know, making them worthy to be the focus of a whole AP. And
on top of that, always providing new adventure hooks for and new places to explore in case you are not running the adventure path, or if you are, so that you can breathe even more life into the region where it's at.
Yeah, certainly, like, you know, I wrote it with the adventure path in mind, but a majority of the locations and personalities in the Talbor campaign setting book will not play a direct role in the AP. So,
right.
So it's more akin to the Kadira Gateway to the East and what was
the Andoran or, Spirit of Liberty.
Andoran Spirit of Liberty.
Similar to the Chelyax book too.
And Chelyax.
I think that's a good parallel
here. The Infernal Empire.
Right,
yeah.
Because that book really fed into Hell's Rebels and Hell's Vengeance, and so there was a lot of sort of cross communication between me and James and Rob to try to figure out how all that was going to tie together, mm-hmm. and because it was all being done sort of in parallel.
Yeah.
And so Mark and Crystal had a lot of that going on as well, in which she was figuring out all of these, you know, different crossing threads of the adventure path, and Mark was figuring out, you know, how he was going to write all the adventure hooks for these places and figure out,
right.
You know, that making sure that we are very consistent across the adventure path and the
yeah.
and the campaign.
So if you like our really continuity heavy setting, you know, nation books, this is the one for you. And a lot of people have been asking for it for a long time. So
yeah, very true.
So it was a lot of fun to write, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what people think about it.
Sure. Great. So after that, after Taldor, we have got a poster mat folio for the Ruins of Azla Adventure Path, which the very first one was here at the show. We're out of it. We ran out yesterday. But that's your standard poster mat folio for the Adventure Path. Adam Daigle put together all the different maps and things that that you'll need to use. So that'll be a nice companion to that Adventure Path. And then...
Yeah, well, and it's an AP that's really exploration heavy.
It is,
you
yeah.
do, you know,
it's a new continent, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Your players in that are... members of an expeditionary company that is trying to set up a new colony for Andoran on the shattered continent of Aslan. And so a lot of, especially the early adventures, involve your PCs exploring an island and then exploring a whole chain of islands. And so these maps will be really handy for anyone who's running the campaign, who wants their players to be able to lay the map out and, you know, decide which of these
yeah.
islands they want to go to and, you know...
Right, because more so than in any other adventure path, what does the place look like? Where can you go? What's around this area?
Yeah,
those are questions
in,
that
even in, like,
we
Kingmaker,
haven't answered.
Yeah, even in Kingmaker, like... Sure, it's untamed, and you get to, you know, define your kingdom.
But it's on the main map.
It's on the main map, and you
yeah.
know what's to each side of it. But this one is, like, off the map. And
yeah.
so...
So there's this real sense of danger and wonder, right? And these maps are going to yeah. be really useful for players who very much feel like they don't know what they're doing or where they're going. So.
Right. And then one of the maps will also be a map of a Merfolk City. So
right.
That's
awesome.
That's new. We've never done that before. It's fun.
It's a lot of underwater adventuring that happens in Ruins of Azalon, so that it's been one of the secondary themes we've gotten to play with it.
That's true, and we've got some companion books for that as well. We got Blood of the Sea as a player companion. We've got Aquatic Adventures for campaign setting. Those have been out for a little while, and we actually do have them both down at the booth. So if you want underwater rules, those are all laid out there, and there's a little bit of an expansion and streamlining component to those to help make it just a little bit easier, since some of the previous versions of those rules were a little more unwieldy for an entire campaign.
Should totally look through Blood of the Sea. It has some really cute stuff in it, because whereas normally we take some of our land-dwelling player races and explore them a whole bunch, in this case you have entries on Merfolk, you have entries on Lokatha, which are fish people,
yeah.
On Gilman, who, if they're out of the water for more than 24 hours, start to dry up and break to pieces. And even
and
different...
are probably Manchurian candidates for the
yeah, and so, and even just proposing different ways to allow these different species to join a typical terrestrial or predominantly terrestrial adventuring party, including one of my favorite pieces of art in a long time, which is a merfolk riding a special saddle on a horse.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
So.
With the tail to the side.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, those are great books. So the last campaign setting book that we've announced for 2018 is a book that I feel like has been received very well on the forums. I think a couple of the comments have been, it's about time. It's called NRC Taverns. And it is Bars of Galarian. So did you write? Are you writing any of this?
I'm not writing anything.
Okay.
I was there for that planning session, though, when we were pitching all of the possible ideas.
Yeah.
And nothing quite brings the entire meeting room alive, like talking about different bars that could be. Yep. And then trying
did
to pit.
Did the studded leather bar make the.
No, Mark.
No. Okay.
And also the number of times that people then pitched mixed drink recipes that they wanted to include in the book associated with each one of the bars.
Yeah, and so one of the really – we've had so much fun on the creative side with this book. In recent months, we've been doing a lot more collaboration with getting members of other teams involved in planning the early stages of the book to try to just conceptualize things a little more. And Inner Sea Taverns was one of those books that we did that for. So we got together and with like Sonia Morris and Adam Fick and Sarah Robinson of the art team, Judy Bauer of the editing team, I think Chris Carey might have been in that meeting as well, and just talked about like what are the cool things that this book could do? What are the neat like what are neat visual elements? And one of the things that we came up with was a page treatment for the opening spread of each tavern that involves like a full double truck image of what the inside of the bar looks like, and then running along the side will be a menu of items or a special drink or a special recipe, and it will be done in the style of that tavern. So you will actually see like when you go to a bar and they give you the specials menu, and it's the skinny thing, and say it's like a very upscale place, it's got like gold leafing around side of it,
but it's the dwarven place. It's carved in stone.
Yeah, there's going to be a picture of like an anvil or something.
Yeah,
there's going to be burnt edges, so we just went in a very like thematic route for all of these bars, and we think that the look that's going to come out is going to be really special. Speaking of like an upscale tavern, we've got like an elven wine bar from Kionin that's going to be pretty equivalent to something like that. We have a like a members only club in
Tal'dor. Like a Diogenes club
in
style
Tal'dor.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and then on the flip side, we've got like a Numerian fluids bar, and we've got which sounds really weird, but
Silver Mount, which is a giant spaceship that crashed into Numeria, constantly leaks fluids, and some people have decided that whatever, let's just
drink them and see what happens.
Yeah, if I lick the side, I grew a sixth finger. That's pretty cool. What if I do it again?
I'm dead.
And for some unearthly reason, it's addictive. So seemed like just the sort of place.
Yeah. Let's see. What are some of the other bars in that one? We have.
Is there something on the west coast of Garand?
Oh yeah, I believe that there is. We've got some cannon drop bars that are going in there as well. We've got one in Osirian that is the outdoor beer garden type with the statue in the middle that was name dropped in the gazetteer for I think it was in the Osirian book.
It's in what? Yeah, one of the
For Wadi? Is it in Wadi? I think it's in Wadi.
I don't remember which city it's in. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, so we've got all kinds of cool things. We've got some great writers, and that was another one that the writers were really excited to do.
Yeah, I've never heard anybody so excited to do research for one of our books.
Yeah, very much. That was one that's like, okay, we need a very small pool of people to ask because we know no one's going to turn us down and they're going to want as much as we give them.
We can't have 40 writers on
it. And there was a couple times where somebody was like, I'll take as much as you'll give me, and it's like, I can't give you eight
it's
sections.
Like, know your limits, man.
We're cutting you off, freelancer.
But not only does that... Yeah, we're cutting you off, freelancer. I like that.
Yeah.
But not only does that is that book going to have some extra some taverns, some specific in-world taverns, but we've also got a short section of rules that's called Drinking and Fighting that Jason Keeley is writing, and it's all about bar fighting and in little rule subsystems.
It's almost like performance combat,
but
not
in a
really.
Bar and fighting.
It's, yeah.
It's pretty good.
Because if you're not a monk or brawler class in Pathfinder, find that unarmed strike is really unfortunate when the bar fights actually start up. So this is more of a system that allows a little bit more dynamic play.
It's just everyone, everyone getting a attack of opportunity on each other. And
yeah,
that's
so
all
basically
you've done
just punching yourself in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
But
what happens when the wizard gets drunk and starts clubbing people with a spell book?
Make this an actual viable thing, right?
I hope so.
So there's a lot of cool things in that book. It's one that a lot of folks are excited about. See, we've got about 11 minutes. Does anybody have any questions? Anything they want to talk about?
Suggestions?
Yeah, suggestions for products. We are.
Oh, pet that guy over there.
Whenever you're using a campaign setting to develop content for PCs, is there a specific way that you go about doing that, or is it
Like when we're creating player options, oh, so when we're ordering player options that take place in a specific place in the world?
Yeah, when you're building encounters or things to do, people to interact with, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Do you start with a companion and build from there? Do you build a framework of what you want to have?
Yeah, I think that that when I'm doing it personally, I make sure that I create a baseline of information that we've published for myself, so I make sure to read what I know is out there and do some searches. I might ask Mark, hey, is there any time that we've mentioned this? Because there are a lot of, you know, weird little one-drop pieces of information out there in books that are not necessarily immediate or we don't always immediately remember. So I try to read what's out there and build the outline off of there and what makes sense and you know, where the things are headed and try to make it feel like it's a cohesive whole.
Yeah, I think that ultimately everything... For me, everything hinges on story, and that's the most important thing, is I ask, what story am I trying to tell with this, or what story is a GM going to use this to tell? And then I make the rules, options, and everything support the story, rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
It can be very easy to be like, oh, I want this crazy Wahoo mechanic, how can I justify it within the world?
Yeah.
And I try and work the opposite way and say, what's this Wahoo thing within the world, and then how do I represent that with mechanics?
Yeah, because our mechanics can be an interesting way of showing off organizations, showing off philosophical expressions, things like that. And so it can be one thing to provide a paragraph that says, these people exist. It's totally another thing to create an archetype or a feat or something that says, and they're special because X.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, anybody else there in the middle?
So I really liked in Blood of the Beast where you had a map that shows
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So on the inside front cover, that's usually where that
we were like the cat folks congregate on the windowsill.
Yeah, and then Mark got shot down, and we're like, no. It's got to be serious.
Yeah, because we also did that in Bastards of Galarian.
Yeah.
We've done that a few times.
We've done that a lot. Yeah, and honestly, we talk about it a lot. We go back and forth sometimes on what we should put on the inside front cover. But where it makes sense to just do some geolocation and tell people where these things are coming from, where we're mentioning all this stuff in canon, that's usually where we do it the most. And I think Blood of the Beast was one where it really just made sense.
Because we'd provided rules for where these creatures... You know, we'd said, oh, here's how you play a catfolk. But we never said where your catfolk is likely from.
Yeah.
You know, and so that there are times that it's really important for us to do that, especially when we're taking something that has been largely setting neutral rules and putting context in for it within the setting.
A good example of some of the upcoming ones where we have done that is, off the top of my head, Anti-Heroes Handbook has anti-heroic organizations, and there are actually spreads where it's mentioning some of these organizations, and so the inside front cover is a map, and then it's like showing where each of those organizations are based or where they originated from.
Yeah.
So in places where it makes sense to give a lot of context like that, that's where we...
But the art team often like gives us a side eye when we say, and just put a map on the inside front cover.
Right, we don't want to get lazy about it.
They want to do something that's like fancy and really artistic, and we're like, no, just put a map. And they're like, people have seen this map 1,000 times.
Yeah, like, totally.
Oh, well, that's our map.
Totally. Anybody else? Up there.
Oh. I also don't know if you've already done something like this, but like games and competitions, tournaments, as an idea for...
That is an idea that's definitely come up in a number of brainstorms.
It has. And in fact, in Intercity Taverns, we have pub games. We have a section on pub games. So
yeah, so we'll do a little bit of that. There's an article in Pathfinder AP number 13 called The Golden Goblin that has some gambling games and things at a casino in there. So we've done stuff like that in the past, but I think an entire book of that would be a lot of fun. Yeah.
We have somebody in the back.
I think to go in the past, example, do an adventure map, way in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Both John and I would love to write that book.
That gets pitched a lot and gets shot down for various reasons.
Yeah, there's it's
don't care. Going to try.
Yeah, exactly.
John's just going to write it and keep putting it in the manuscript on
your books. Yeah, it just keeps showing up in the to edit folder, and it's like, what is this book even? This isn't.
John's like, don't worry about it. They got to prove.
Just print it. Just go. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of considerations to take to take into account for a book in the past.
Not just maybe a book, but just an adventuring path. Example to be part of why now is like that, and maybe to run heroes to go maybe
Yeah, it's that John and I have both pitched, you know, something on how to run an adventure in the path in the past, and as of yet, it has not been approved by the powers that be. But yeah. But that is an idea that you're not alone in wanting to see.
I want to have those pages that just say, "Do you want to be part of the Shining Crusade? Run the adventure that's the Shining Crusade. You want to run the adventure that is the quest for Sky for the Dwarven people? Great. Here's how to structure it.
Yeah.
You want to do the Eslanti war against the Serpent Folk? Well, you don't have Caden Kalian or Norgobur or Aridin or any of them around, but
Aridin's around. He's just not a god yet.
He ain't listening yet. But he ain't dead either, so.
Yeah.
Blasphemy.
It's a fine balance there. He had about 4,000 years where he was both listening and alive.
Man, you used to be cool.
What happened to you, man? You're so cool.
Yeah.
Did you have one?
Oh, yeah, you had a suggestion, right?
Yeah, I was, this is one I keep pitching, but I would really like to see a book about some of the more economic or non-violent half of the population
yeah.
and how those define. Like, it's been joked about called Ultima Peasant or the Inner Sea Almanac.
Yeah, James Jacobs also wants to really yeah. do a book like that.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, we do publish it is a, you know, an adventure game, and it can be very easy to get stuck in the weeds on that sort of thing, and, like, you've suddenly written this economic treatise that bores economists, and also none of us are economists, so...
That's true, we'd probably screw it up.
Yeah, so we'd probably screw it up, and then the actual economists on our message boards would not let us
forget
it. Would
be like, what the heck, guys? Come
yeah,
on.
Exactly.
You don't know what you're talking about, and we'd have to
so,
be like, oh.
So there's interest in that, but finding a way to do it in an exciting way
yeah.
is...
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge,
yeah.
And, you know, again, the decision makers have not yet decided to put us up against that challenge.
But it's definitely an ongoing pitch in the office, and one that gets more legs as time goes on.
Yeah, and it's something that type of information is something we've been trying to seed into other books, even if the entire book is not about that. You know, in the Tal'Dorei section, I really tried to make sure that each prefecture had a product that kept its economy going and had that sort of thing, and, you know, and we talked about how they traded with one another and things like that. So, you know, we're putting it out there, but I don't know when or if we would ever do an entire book that's just about trade routes and, you know.
It and that. Helps the case. The second that James mentioned it on the show, on during the last interview, we got flooded with 50-plus yes, please, 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 please.
Mm. Well, okay.
Tell
them to go to the forums.
Yeah, seriously.
Or to email ericmona@paizo.com.
Do we have another question in the middle there? Yeah, go for it.
Book about weaponless handbook for like martial artists.
Okay.
A hand-to-hand combat one. That could be a good player companion.
Or cat folk that focus on their claws. Or just humans that focus on
their claws. Why do people keep mentioning cat folk? Ah.
Blame organized play.
It's like people like those things.
That's a great suggestion.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. That is, because we've done Weapon Masters and we've done Armor Masters Handbook,
yep.
but we haven't done like Fist
hand
Masters.
To hand, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Combat. Oh, you had one up there?
Like local folk heroes, folk stories. If you're from Kyan, what are the local heroes?
Yeah.
Like, what are the local legends and fairy tales
yeah.
and things like that?
Yeah, that's really
that's
interesting.
That's what Crystal Frazier has pitched that a number of times because
mm-hmm.
she really likes that in-world story, that second level of storytelling
yeah.
of, like, what are the stories that the people we're telling stories about tell?
Yeah.
Like Beetle the Bard. Who's Beetle the Bard? Oh, here's
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
And she did a great job with the harrowing where she told the backstory of all the cards in the harrow deck. And so so she's
yeah.
also been like, let's do a fairy tale book. And yeah, so you're not alone.
She would love
that.
To do that.
Yeah.
We did have a very short section of Inner Sea Intrigue that had the rumor tables. which is sort of in that vein. And I think that that was us being kind of sneaky to see how that was going to be received.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun to do, but I didn't hear a lot of feedback.
I didn't, yeah, no, because there's no character option, so our forums are silent on the issue.
we also did a little bit of that in Occult Mysteries.
Mm. Yeah.
Remember the theories?
Occult Mysteries has theories some, like, theories and legends of, like, what do the people on Galarian say happened to Aridin? What are their guesses?
Yeah.
You know?
Some of them are just wild.
Some of them are true.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to get booed for even making this suggestion, but with Blood of the Sea having a race that doesn't even have legs and Starfinder having a race that's just pretty much a floating brain, we're getting closer. I want a book, a player companion book on flumps.
All right.
There is no one in the office, absolutely not, definitely not Adam Daigle, who would do a flumps.
Yeah, he'd hate that suggestion. You should never tell him that
never
suggestion.
Never tell him that.
So, Flumps of Galarian, but that sounds more like a campaign setting book, because we would need 64 pages.
We would need 64 pages.
Right. Yeah.
Just to include
just
all of
enough.
Their poetry.
And flump, their eye stuff.
Flump poetry is a thing.
Yeah, isn't it gaseous, though?
Well.
How do you convey that in a print product?
They have to eat something.
Lawful Goodly.
Lawful Goodly.
Blood of the Tentacle?
Yeah.
Blood of the Tentacle.
Yeah, I mean, if you like flumps, they are one of the 10 misfit monsters included in Misfit Monsters Redeemed. So so that's where we've written the most about them.
I think that's about our time. We've got 10 till. We've got about 9 till.
Well, we can see any other questions, suggestions,
really
or the like.
Yeah.
Yeah, one last thing. Sure.
Aerial Adventures? We've got aquatic, we've got underground, we've got wilderness.
Aerial adventures?
Yeah.
Like fighting the clouds.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's a great suggestion. We do have a plane of air section on Planes of Power that, you know, is, of course, on the plane of air, but it's got a lot of really neat adventure hooks.
If
that
there's anywhere that you're
interest.
Fighting in the air, it's the plane of air.
Yeah. But that'd be great.
Or flying, depending how you're looking at it, yeah.
Yeah, directionality is really strange on the plane of air, it turns out.
As somebody who's had to manage several adventures there.
Just decide you want to fall that way, and that's the way you fall.
Which way's up? Which way's down? You decide.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you guys for coming. Hope this was informational and enjoyable. And
we will definitely pass your suggestions on to the people who make the decisions.
Absolutely.
Because they don't listen to us. So.
What? I pitched so many things early this year, and now some of them are starting to show up. It's cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys very much.
And you can always catch us out in the hall.